Hey there, y'all. We'll get to that episode that you pressed play on in just a second, but I wanted to make sure you knew that the club is opening again for new members next Tuesday, April 30th. The club is a virtual community of parents of kids with big, baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, and you can read all about it over at robingoble.com/the club. If you already get emails from me, you'll get a message on the 30th reminding you that the club is open. Otherwise, set yourself a calendar reminder to go to robingoble.com/the club next Tuesday, the 30th. Alrighty, let's get to that show you're waiting for.
So when your kid's behavior is baffling, and yours is too sometimes, yeah, I know. Let's take a break from all the bamboozle here on the baffling.
Hello, hello, dear ones. Welcome or welcome back to the Baffling Behavior Show, or the podcast formerly known as Parenting After Trauma. I'm your host, Robin Goble, and the Baffling Behavior Show is a place where me and you come together, parents, professionals, whoever you are with whatever hat you wear, and we talk about the science of being relationally, socially, and behaviorally human. We mostly talk about that with a focus on our kids or on parenting or on working with kids. But of course, parenting and working with kids ultimately requires that we think about ourselves as well. And so we spend a lot of time talking about both our kids, parenting, how to help our kids, how to help ourselves. You know, sometimes I'm here and offering you super practical tips and techniques and ideas. Sometimes I'm offering neuroscience education so that these baffling behaviors in yourself and your kids can make more sense. And sometimes I come with I see you, I know you, your experience is valid kind of episode. Today, I think, is going to be a little bit of both an I see you episode, and also here's some practical tips and ideas that you might be able to implement that are going to hopefully be helpful. A couple weeks ago on the podcast, we talked about what it's like to live with someone who's chronically dysregulated. And we looked at the way that that impacts our own experience of being in a connected relationship that has like this mutual dance of serve and return, right? There's this energetic way that relationship has a mutually agreed upon and in sync back and forth. There's a rhythm to connected relationships. I serve something to you, you catch it and serve it back to me. And we really literally call that serve and return in attachment literature. And when we live with somebody who's in a state of relatively chronic, or at least just regular dysregulation, that impacts our ability to be in a mutual serve and return relationship with them, because folks in protection mode have a hard time offering up connection and offering up relationship and doing it in a kind of mutually enjoyable kind of way. Ultimately, living with someone who's chronically, or at least a lot of the time, dysregulated leaves us in a state of pretty chronic or ongoing dysregulation. And that means kind of chronic protection mode. And ultimately, we find ourselves feeling like it's impossible to keep offering connection. Yet, if you listen to this show, you probably tune into other social media accounts, get other email newsletters, maybe even take courses or read books by other folks who are telling you that what your kid needs is connection, right? And so you're caught, you're stuck, right? You're in this state of, I feel so dysregulated. I'm so far down the protection mode pathway that it feels impossible to keep offering connection. Yet I know that the very thing that my kid needs in order for their nervous system to heal, for them to come out of chronic protection mode, is co-regulation, felt safety, and offerings of, and it feels impossible to do that. It feels impossible to offer a connection to them, and it feels impossible to offer connection to ourselves, right? We start to feel kind of numb. There starts to maybe feel like this sense of nothingness, or maybe you're not numb or experiencing a sense of nothingness, but instead you're experiencing like a sense of agitation or irritation. But regardless, the idea of offering connection to your child or maybe even to anyone, it starts to feel impossible, like shuddering just thinking about it, or the sense in your body of like recoiling or backing away or even protecting yourself. And y'all, I promise, if you're nodding your head or you're thinking like, yeah, I feel this way, you are not a bad person. This doesn't make you a bad person or a bad parent or anything like that. It means that you're stuck in protection mode. Ironically, so is your kid. It's so hard to understand how our kids can be so intense in their rejection of any type of connection or relationship, right? It's like we know how, you know, human it is to be in connection. And then we like watch our kids just, you know, fight tooth and nail to reject that connection or stay out of connection. And it's so confusing until suddenly we find ourselves in the exact same place. And I certainly know that I've been there. Feeling like I never want to hear anyone speak anything ever again for the rest of my life, right? Or, you know, feeling like I didn't want to ever even think about anyone else, let alone meet their needs or offer connection or co-regulation or safety or, frankly, y'all, even just being nice. Like, sometimes I cannot conjure up being nice. And I've also been in that place of, I don't care, and I don't care that I don't care. And I can see it. Like I'm noticing I don't care, and I don't care that I don't care, but I like don't even care, right? So I'm certainly not putting forth any effort to change anything. It's a really, really, really protective place to be and lets us know how hurt that person is feeling, whether it's you or someone else. Nobody wants to continually experience the pain of rejection, the pain of searching for connection only to find that it's not there, right? Or that it's absent. Or that the kind of connection that's being offered or returned is dangerous, right? That's a terrible, terrible place to be. I know that you don't want to be in that place. And believe it or not, your kid doesn't want to be in that place either. And yet here we are in a place where it's hard to keep offering connection, even though we know it's the thing that we really need to keep doing. So what do we do about that? If you're feeling like the last thing you could imagine doing is offering connection or being in connection with your kid, or maybe someone else is coming to mind for you at the moment, maybe your partner or someone else that you're in relationship with, if it's feeling that impossible, then actually I don't want you to focus on trying to connect with that person. Okay. This is not an episode about how to keep offering connection to whoever that person is that you're having a hard time offering connection to. Okay. Don't want you to think about that. What I want you to actually think about are three things. Okay. And I'm going to put these three things in the show notes. So if you have a hard time remembering them, you can go back to the show notes and look. The three things I want you to think about are, one, who could offer me connection? Two, how could I offer me connection, like connection to myself? And three, who could I offer connection to who is likely to receive that connection and return it? Like, who's a safe person to offer connection to? Okay, so we're going to go through those three a little more in depth. I'm going to start with number one. Who in your life could offer you connection? So ideally, and I understand that this is not true for everyone, but ideally, there's someone in your life who you feel safe enough with to be totally authentic with, but also who doesn't let you get stuck in protection mode, right? We've all been in those relationships where we're kind of griping or complaining to one another. And all of a sudden we realize that's all we're doing. Like, we're just stuck in swimming. Like, we're feeding off of the complaining and essentially what's being in protection mode. It's not being met. Like, it's not being moved through. It's not kind of coming to completion and then shifting into connection mode. And that is an important part of finding a person who you can be safe enough to be completely authentic with, complain, tell the honest truth to about what's happening in your life and in your family and what your real, true, honest feelings are, right? Even the things that you can't imagine telling anyone, finding someone to tell those to. But also that person doesn't let you get stuck in protection mode. I'm interrupting the show real quick because if you happen to be a new listener, you might find yourself being a little overwhelmed by all this information. That makes total sense. I mean, there's like 150 episodes plus all the free resources that are available over my website. It's just a lot. So many folks have asked me, where do I start? So I created a separate podcast stream called Start Here. What I did is I took the 10 episodes that I want you to listen to first, and then I want you to listen to in this specific order, and I put them into a separate podcast stream so that you don't have to search for them. You can just press play and they'll play one after the other after the other. If you go to robingoble.com/start here, you'll be able to get an invitation to subscribe, and then you'll be able to listen right in the same podcast app you're using right now. robingoble.com/start here. What's extra tricky about this, not even to mention the fact that for some people it's impossible to find this person, but even if you do have a person who's like that, that you could reach out to, the further we descend onto the protection pathway, the less likely we are to reach out. So even when we have people in our life who can offer us this kind of connection, we stop reaching out and we find ourselves isolated and alone. And so I want you to just pause and consider for a moment, do you have a person in your life that you could give energy to and like nurture the relationship with so that they could offer you the connection that you needed? And when I mean like nurture the relationship, it could be as simple as like reach out to them, send them a text. Does this person exist for you? And if so, how could you go about kind of rekindling that relationship with them? And if it feels like there is no one in your personal life, is there another place you could go? Is there a support group you could look to? Is there, if your experience has you connected with any sort of agency, do they offer any sort of connecting support experience? Whether this be like a virtual experience, an in-person experience, is there an organization in your community? Any of the places you receive services from, like if you take your kid to therapy or occupational therapy or any sort of support, you know, place you get support from for your kid, is there a place, do any of them offer, you know, kind of support or connection groups? And if not, what about online, right? if even a Facebook forum is well moderated, it can be a really lovely place to find people to be in connection with. And I don't mean to pretend that a well-moderated Facebook group with full of strangers, you know, it takes the place for, you know, a close in-person resonant relationship. But sometimes that's just what we have available, and we need to lean into what we have available and then grieve for what isn't available to us. This idea of creating a space for really dysregulated parents to receive connection. I mean, this is literally why I created the club. Like, I wanted to create a space that was focused on parents showing up and both giving and receiving connection to folks. And by design, you know, a community where a lot of folks certainly are in protection mode, but sometimes people are also in connection mode. And that connection mode actually grows because of our experience, right, in this space or in this group. The club is, of course, not the only place that this happens by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, really, any well-moderated group, and well-moderated, y'all, is key, right? Any place that's got containment and safety and structure and is well moderated, and there's some really, really specific key things that I've kind of infused into the structure of the club that I think makes the club work out the way that it's supposed to. But again, it's not the only place where this is possible, right? Any space where people come together like this, they kind of create this metaphorical, like, combined joint window of tolerance. So even though there's lots of dysregulated people in the group, there hopefully should be enough regulated people, but especially, you know, who's moderating or hosting the group, that despite the fact that there's, you know, it's by design a place for people who are pretty dysregulated, there is still this sense of safety and containment. And I know that a virtual group that offers you, you know, being seen and felt known and safety and containment and compassion, I know that all that's lovely. I know that what you really need is practical help. Like, sometimes this practical is like somebody pick up groceries for you, or, you know, drive your other kids to, you know, their appointments, or, you know, it's just like very practical boots on the ground help. And I get that. And because I can't do that, creating a space where people can give and receive connection has become the way that I attempt to support folks and contribute, you know, to this challenge, right? And it's not enough, but it's what I can offer, and it is extremely powerful. A space where people will offer you connection. It's not a meal, but it's a space to have a shift in your nervous system. And that, in some ways, is actually just as important as somebody doing real practical boots on the ground help. You know, the other thing that is really helpful about a virtual space of connection, and again, the club is one place, but there's a lot of places where this is available because of how folks are being so creative and how they're using the internet. But another thing that's really good about virtual connection is that it happens in moments. And this could even be like a friend that you text with or send memes back and forth to, that it's like that channel of communication is always open. And it happens in these little drops, these little moments, right? You can log in, or you can send a text or a meme whenever you're thinking about it. It's not at some predetermined time, right? Like Mondays at 6 p.m., like what happens with in-person groups or even your therapy appointment, right? It's this predetermined time, and it's for this specific length of time, which is great also. But what that setup or arrangement doesn't do is offer the opportunity to just touch in and touch out for like these quick little moments, which is a way to self-titrate and a way to go kind of get the connection you need when you need it, when you want it, and then kind of move back out again. I mean, it's another reason why I emphasize so strongly in the club that the club is to be exactly what our members want it to be, right? Like I'm always saying, like you can't be late. So never apologize for being late. Like you come when you can, as you can, for as long as you can, and then you leave. And that like, that is a literally, you know, a part of the club that I designed with intentionality, because that piece is so important. And the reason that I'm saying this right now is because I know that sometimes, you know, having virtual connections or online connections or, you know, having a Facebook group can feel like kind of a lousy consolation prize when what you really are craving is in-person connection. And I get that. Again, it's not exactly a replacement for it, but there are aspects of virtual connection that actually are in some ways better, because very few in-person relationships are available whenever you want them to touch into and touch out of, you know, for just moments at a time. They just don't really work like that. So there are pluses and minuses to both. And I think that's what my very long-winded, you know, soliloquy here is all about, is that seek connection when and where you can. And it might not look like exactly what you want or exactly what you hoped connection would look like. And there's space to grieve that. But also there actually are some benefits to the different ways our virtual world allows us to be in connection with one another. So that was number one. Can you find a place where you can receive connection? It doesn't even have to be from humans, right? People receive connection from their pets, from being out in nature, from all sorts of different ways. Plants. I mean, there's documentation and research around how we can give and receive connection in all sorts of different ways. And there is no right or wrong way of doing connection for you, right? The right way to do connection for you is the way that helps you feel settled and helps you come back into contact with yourself. So if that's pets and animals or nature or these different ways of connection, of receiving connection, please know that that is just as valid. The second thing I had suggested, right? I said, one, find places who can offer you connection. Two, how can you be in connection with yourself? Now, again, sometimes when I start talking about meeting our own needs like this, it can feel, again, like this like crappy consolation prize. But connecting with ourselves is actually a very, very important core aspect of being human. Okay, so literal connection with our physical bodies is important. Movement and exercise helps us stay in connection with our body. Even the most gentle kinds of movement and exercise, like as gentle as walking, but it could also even be as gentle as, like in this exact moment, I'm sitting in a chair that swivels, right? There's very, very gentle movement. And even as I sit alone in my basement and I podcast, like in this moment, I'm moving my hands, right? So finding ways to be in connection with your physical body through movement or exercise can be very nurturing, very important. Other ways to be in connection with your physical body is to engage with water, baths, showers. Water helps us feel ourselves. If you're a club member, you know that we recently, at the end of March, we did a Lycra lab and we learned about all the ways we can use Lycra to help our kids feel more regulated, and we can apply all those ideas to ourselves. Lycra is an inexpensive, easy to access tool that helps us feel ourselves. But any of our senses, taste, smell, sound, any of our senses, right? Engaging any of them all help us feel ourselves. So sometimes engaging or experimenting with intense tastes, sour, for example, sweet, bitter, doesn't really even have to be intense, but just kind of experimenting with taste. I like them to be intense, but other people won't. Smells, experimenting with different smells, sounds, changing what your environment sounds like. There's different ways that we can be very deliberate in how we engage our sensory system, and we can engage in those experiences and then also take just a few moments, like literally just seconds, just to notice the sensory experience. And that can be very, very powerful in helping our bodies return to connection mode. Another way to be in connection with yourself, of course, is self-compassion. Y'all, I know I talk about self-compassion constantly. It's either annoying or it's not. I'm aware of the fact that it might be sort of obnoxious that I'm constantly talking about self-compassion, but I regulate through the fact that you might think it's obnoxious because it's that important. Self-compassion is a way of being in connection with ourselves. Compassion comes from connection mode and brings us into connection mode. I know that if you're feeling like you can't offer connection to your kid or someone else who you love, you then are probably either one, criticizing yourself for that, or two, getting stuck in kind of contempt and bitterness. And this all makes perfect sense because these are behaviors of protection mode. But they ironically then are sending cues of danger to ourselves and then keeping us stuck in protection mode. It becomes this, you know, somewhat impossible to break out of cycle. We have to be really deliberate about breaking out of it, okay? So the step for that isn't to criticize you criticizing yourself. The step for that is to notice when you're critical of yourself, notice when you're feeling contemptuous toward others, and then offer yourself compassion for being stuck in a place where criticism and contempt are in such close reach. Because what that tells me is that there's a lot of pain there, very far down the protection mode pathway, and that is worthy and deserving of self-compassion. And if self-compassion feels impossible to you, maybe you can find a place where compassion is prioritized. Again, that was a very deliberate strategic part of my initial way I set up the club, because I know the power of self-compassion, but I also know how far off it feels for most. And I know that receiving compassion is the path towards self-compassion. So I wanted to create a space where compassion, which is not toxic positivity, but true compassion was the foundation, knowing that one, offering compassion is also good for you. And eventually, if you are the one being offered compassion, like you receive enough compassion, eventually that is going to shift into self-compassion. So my curiosity then could be, is there a place like that in your life? And if not, it might be that the club could be a good option for you. But other folks have told me, people send me emails and they tell me that even listening to this podcast is a place where they receive connection and compassion. Getting my emails is a way that they receive connection and compassion. Even reading my book, which again, I wrote in that way, very specifically, which not everybody loves. Not everybody loves the way that the book is written, but it was important to me. I write it in that way because I knew the potential power of how I wrote that book and engaged in that story could maybe potentially become a way you can offer yourself self-compassion. Okay, so again, how can you offer connection to yourself? Okay, and that was the second thing we explored here. And then the third one we'll explore here before we start to wrap up is, how could you offer connection to someone who's likely to receive it and send it back? So it makes a lot of sense that if you are living with somebody who isn't giving you a lot of connection in return, that turning to other places to get connection makes a lot of sense, right? Turn, you know, to other relationships, including the relationship to yourself. But also offering connection to someone else, someone who's likely to receive that connection and send it back to you, is another strategy, another thing you can do when it's hard to keep offering connection. Maybe you know someone who's in need of connection. And maybe y'all, this sounds impossible. Maybe you're reading and you're like, there's no way, I have no energy, no way, no how. I'm not offering connection to someone else. I'm not even thinking about who could benefit from me offering them connection and compassion. And if you're thinking that, then I want you to just cross this idea right off the list, right off the list. And we want you to think about it again. But if it does sound possible, consider it for just a moment. Maybe you have a friend who's struggling and you could stop by with a coffee or a tea or whatever it is that they like. Maybe there's a volunteer opportunity somewhere in your community that would involve connecting with someone in need and with somebody who would really appreciate it. Again, somebody who would be sending the connection back. Gratitude is connection, right? So finding a place where you could offer yourself, offer your connection, offer your way of showing up in the world, and someone would receive that and have gratitude for it, that's a way connection would be coming back for you, coming back to you. Okay. And y'all, by kind of offering this as a possibility, I'm not suggesting that you ignore your own needs and focus on others. Not at all. What I'm talking about is the mindful act of reaching out, energetically reaching out and literally reaching out, and how that is a form of connection. Giving connection can be such a powerful antidote to feeling like we're alone and isolated. And it typically opens us up to receiving connection back. So I told you we'd explore these three ways, right? Like, who could offer you connection? How could you offer yourself connection? And who could you offer connection to, who is likely to receive it and then offer it in return to you? And I'm going to give you one final little tip or connection hack. It's kind of like a way of offering connection to other people in the hopes that you're going to get it back. But I have found, y'all know, right, that I love glitter. And years and years and years ago, I bought a pair of glitter Doc Marten boots to wear to a concert, to a Pink concert, actually. And I loved them so much that I decided that they made perfect sense to like just integrate into my regular wardrobe. And at first, I just actually integrated it into my speaking engagement wardrobe. Like I kind of used it as almost like a professional prop, right? Like when I showed up at a speaking engagement. And then slowly over time, I started integrating like just into my regular life. And then I bought another pair. And now I have two pairs of glitter Doc Martens and a pair of glitter sandals and a pair of glittery flats and also a pair of pretty fabulous glittery cowboy boots. And this Texan can get away, or former Texan, can get away with wearing glittery cowboy boots, but anyone can. Anyone can. And this is why I'm telling you this story about glittery shoes. People stop me to talk to me about my shoes. And they do this with a smile on their face. It is a way of inviting connection out in the real world from strangers. People stop me on the airport. People stop me in shops. I have been literally walking down the road and had people driving. This has happened both in parking lots and also on an actual side of the road. I've been walking with my glitter shoes on and people stop their cars to roll down the window and tell me how much they love my shoes. And that is, of course, with a big smile on their face. And this is not why I started wearing them, but it is such a beautiful way to kind of, in a way, like project to the world this idea of, hey, I'm open and available for connection. I'm a friendly person. I think that's what glitter shoes tell people. I'm a friendly person. And that invites their connection back. And I end up getting connection from strangers in a lovely, wonderful, silly way. I mean, little girls come up to me in the airport and tap me on the shoulder to talk to me about my shoes. I mean, folks of all ages and all everythings stop me to tell me about how much they love my glittery shoes. And what I almost always say in reply is, you too could have glittery shoes. I just bought them on Amazon. I really like people to know that I'm not special with my glitter shoes. Anybody can buy them and wear them. And if you're delighting in my glitter shoes, imagine how much you could delight in yourself if you put a pair of glitter shoes on your feet and wore them out in the world. So that is my one exceptionally practical tool today. Buy yourself some glitter shoes. The way strangers connect with you out in the real world when you're wearing glitter clothing, it's phenomenal. And if you're having a hard time giving connection to your kid, I'll bet you could use some delight coming at you even from strangers. So there you have it, folks. My best tip at what to do if it's hard to keep offering connection to your kid, go buy some glitter shoes or some glitter clothing. Now, that was just one tip. Hopefully that ended this episode with some smiles and some delight for you, and truly maybe a practical idea if actually giving or receiving connection is feeling too much or too overwhelming right now. Maybe something like this could help you. Glitter shoes. Y'all, I know that if you're in a state where connecting with your kid is feeling really, really, really hard, that even hitting play on this podcast could feel really hard. And I'm so grateful that you did. I'm so grateful that you invite me into your earbuds, into your heart, into your nervous system. Give me the opportunity to have a moment of connection with you. I want you to know how much that matters, how much this very small thing you did, just press play, how much it matters for you. It matters for you. And if this has been helpful, this is episode what, like 170 something? I don't even know. 170 something. There's a lot of episodes you can keep listening to if you just found your way here. So many, right? You can sign up for my emails and you can get connection in your email box. You can go follow me over on social media and get connection on social media. You can head to my website and look at the free resources page, and you can grab yourself a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors. It does come in paperback and ebook and audiobook. So if you like listening, like even if you're enjoying the podcast, audiobook format might be nice for you as well. And if you aren't familiar yet with Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, yes, it's full of tips and techniques and very, very practical ideas, but I wrote it in a way for you to receive connection and compassion. I wrote it in a way that it would be authentic. And I wrote it in a way that it would be neurobiologically supported and how the brain receives compassion and how that changes the brain, compassion and connection. So I wrote it real strategically, and most people are telling me that it's mattered, that reading a book that's written like that has been really impactful on their own nervous system, way, way, way more than just, you know, getting some new tips and techniques and tools, which of course is very important as well. So lots and lots of ways to keep connecting with me. And if you want to connect on a deeper level, on a more intimate level, if you want to be able to hang out and chat with me, you can go and look at when the club opens next. We open for new members every 2 to 3 months. That's at robingoble.com/the club. And if we're not open now for new members, we will be open soon. You can put yourself on the waiting list. All right, y'all. Thank you again so much for showing up, for pressing play, for being part of this movement, for caring enough about yourself to press play, for caring enough about your kid, caring enough about your kid to press play. I will be back with you again next week here on the Baffling Behavior Show. Bye, y'all. Are you ending this episode with maybe a big sigh of relief? Like, yes, finally, someone gets me and my kids. but also maybe a sense of like, okay, but now what? All right, y'all, I've got lots of possible now whats. If you want to connect with me directly, like pick my brain, have access to me almost every day, not to mention hundreds of other parents from around the world who totally get what it's like to be you, then you're going to want to join us in the club. We have monthly live events, including groups for siblings of dysregulated kids, a huge video library with something like 80 or 90 videos, plus transcripts and certificates of completion. Plus, of course, a very active forum that I'm participating in every single day. We open for new members periodically, so go check robingoble.com/the club. If we aren't open now, you can put yourself on the waiting list and I'll let you know the moment we open for new members. That's robingoble.com/the club. Now, if you're a professional and you want to strengthen your capacity to work with the families of kids with big baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, plus use all of my materials, including a 12-module course that follows raising kids with big baffling behaviors, plus be included in an online searchable directory so families all over the world could find you, then you're looking for Being With, which is my year-long immersive training program that runs January through December. So you'll want to go to robingoble.com/beingwith, read all about it, and if you're interested, put yourself on that waiting list too. Now, if you just maybe need a little extra connection and co-regulation, but don't feel like you need to join the club, then you can just keep listening to my podcast, or you could go subscribe to my Start Here podcast, and that'll give you 10 episodes in order that will take you through cultivating a great foundation of parenting with regulation, connection, and felt safety. That's at robingoble.com/start here. You have to go there. You can't just find it in your podcast app. Or you could get yourself a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, paper book, audio book, ebook. You can get that anywhere books are sold. Or you could just head to my website, download one of my very many free resources. I keep them all really easy to access at robingoble.com/free resources. Webinars, masterclasses, ebooks, infographics, all sorts of stuff. Go check it out. See what of those things could be supportive of you or maybe to the other adults in your life who are helping support you and your child. There are just so many ways that you and I could be more connected, and you can get the amount of co-regulation and support that you need. If it feels like a lot to remember, all you have to do is go to robingoble.com and take your time clicking around, seeing what I got there. I am so, so glad you and I are connected now, and I can't wait to be with you again soon in our next episode of the Baffling Behavior Show. Bye-bye, y'all.